So on today's episode, we have the shortlist king himself, Mr. Jason Patterson. But as you know, we'll strip it right back and get to know who Jason really is. As you know, I always like to go right back to the beginning and we'll let Jason introduce himself. So Jason, thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks for the invite.
And Jason, in one of your other interviews, you said that you're an introverted overthinker. What does that mean?
So basically, I'm more of a quiet person. So when I was younger, you know, when your mum says to you, right, don't speak unless spoken to.
Yeah.
So just kept myself to myself. If someone asked me a question, then obviously I'll reply back.
Yeah.
But as well, because I've got a bit of a stutter and that kind of thing, that's why I said, right, I don't want to speak too much because sometimes words don't come out. So I've got to take my time. So, but yeah, so I'm more of an introvert, keep myself to myself, not extravagant, don't like to be out there. So if we're in a room, I'll just stay in the corner, just relax, I'll just observe, and I'm more of a thinker. So I'm always thinking. My mind's constantly going, even when I'm watching TV, like 100 things going through my mind.
So
I'm more of an introvert, not one of them people that like to get out there. But as you get older, you can't really stay in your shell for too long. Because if you're going to talk to girls or part of your job, do presentations, whatever it may be, you need to come out of your shell when need be. So that's why at one point, I said, all right, you know what? I'm going to go into the teaching field, teach about maths. Because you're in the classroom, it's all eyes on you. So it's like you're performing in front of all of the students and sometimes all of the teachers. I've done a bit of teacher training as well. So I was training some of the teachers about techniques in terms of maths teaching. So it's all eyes on you. So you have to come out of your shell. You have to learn to speak properly. You've got to learn to say words that you find difficult to say. Because I was watching the Alex Scott interview with Stephen Bartlett. And when she was talking, I was like, oh, because some words she can't say. Yeah, she can't say. So when she finds a word a bit tricky or a bit difficult, she quickly changes it to another word to replace it or a longer sentence to replace what she wants to say. So I thought, oh, that's me. And she's a presenter taking over from, is it Dan on BBC Sports, whatever it is, taking over, doing World Cup presenting. So I thought, oh, that's good. So it's similar to that. We just come out of your shell. You force yourself to come out of your shell. Just, to, I don't know, it's more like self-development, self-growth, rather than just staying in the house, playing computer games, cocooned, not really talking to anyone. So, yeah.
But it's mad, man, because not a lot of people would know about you. Obviously, I didn't know that you had the stutter. And obviously, people that are looking at you going, oh, wow, you've made all this money through property. That's fantastic. But I think it's very important for people to know that that is something that you still struggle with now. And you're very aware of now. Because even myself, it's something that I'm very conscious of. And I think everyone is to a certain degree, even when you get on camera. And it's how do you, or what would your advice be to people? I mean, you kind of answered it in a way. But to someone that's obviously going through that phase in their life, going, I don't want to make a fool of myself, if that would be the right sort of angle to approach it.
Now, you've got to force yourself out of it. In your job, even at university, you know, when you have to do a 10 or 15 minute presentation in front of a class, you're thinking, oh, I don't want to do it. Heart beating, armpits are wet, like just get rumbles in your stomach. Just force yourself to do it. The first time, second time, third time might be a bit tricky. But then after that, you start to learn, become a bit more confident. Obviously, people might be critical of you, but just try and blank that out. I mean, just try and move forward. Otherwise, you won't improve in that sense. Well, if you're not in that kind of environment, maybe do some short videos on social media, like 10 second clips or 1 minute clips or whatever it is, just to build up your confidence. You can do, I don't know, take a few cuts. Just say, oh, that was a bit rubbish. Let me try again.
Yeah.
So just do it a few times, put yourself out there. Obviously, you might get some criticism initially, but then after that, just move forward and then just grow bit by bit.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that, mate. What was it like growing up, at school, for yourself with a stutter as well?
Yeah, it was funny because there's a guy called Dwayne. He's, all right, before I used to speak 100 miles an hour. I still speak fast, but not as fast as before. And then there's a guy called Dwayne who had a stutter, stammer, and he spoke 100 miles an hour. So when us two were talking, like it's pure jokes. Yeah. Everyone's like, ah, it's pure jokes. But then it was all right. That, because obviously we're in school, and then I went to an all-boys school. So whenever anyone takes a mic, then it's obviously a little play fighting, test your strength out, headlocks. And afterwards, when people taking the mic, and they used to fight, but we used to get into like play fights. We used to play Mercy or get them on the floor and then put their knee in their chest and then it's like, they'll tap out. Yeah. So after a while, people are like, oh, even though he's got a stutter, I don't really want to mess with him too much. Keep it calm. So you get a bit of respect that way. But you just work around it. Just don't speak as much. Especially when you had to read in class, in the English lesson. And yeah, it's all right, turn to page 12. Jason, it's your turn to read. Then that part used to kill me. It used to kill me. Yeah, because the reading part of it, I can read. But then because, again, it was listening to you. I mean, some words you can't really pronounce properly. Those parts were like the worst parts.
But I suppose that then sort of forced you to become better at it in a way.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
So what you've done, and obviously I've seen this on another interview where you've gone, you'd sit there and you'd go, do you know what? I'm going to actually become better at this subject, for example, maths.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you'd watch the buses go by.
Exactly, yeah.
So tell me more about that, because that fascinates me.
No, because we were there, because I lived with my mum and my gran, like has an association house. And then where we were, it's like a mini bus depot. I think it was a 210, 41, I think 91 now as well. And then I used to like buses because my granddad used to work for TFL, like when he came over from Jamaica. But every morning before school, you just look at the buses. I mean, I'd have a piece of paper there. This is before primary school kind of thing. So I used to look at the buses and then I'd have a piece of paper. And then I can't remember if it was a pencil or chalk, crayon or whatever, but I used to count. I used to mark how many of those buses came or went past. So, but I was started to do tally charts before I even know about tally charts, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I started doing little bar charts, but I didn't know they were called bar charts. So tally charts, bar charts, I was doing before I got to school. And then I got into school and then, right, today we're going to be learning about tally charts. I was like, huh? I know this already kind of thing. But yeah. I didn't know it was called that. And then bar charts, and then I used to put 91, 41, 210. I think I was to like Brent Cross. And I used to do my own little charts at home before I was taught in school. But I didn't know about that kind of thing until I got to school.
So why was you growing up on that council estate?
Mm.
What was it like growing up there?
It was a housing association flat. So it wasn't really like an estate, but it was fine. It was all right. Had obviously normal people around, not, as in like normal level people, as in like not higher class or just around my sort of level, went to the park, played football. Obviously you had the rude boys, you had the ones that played football, we had the computer game boys.
Mm.
It was all right, it was nice. Just hang out, just chill, play runouts, run the flats, play had, play for local football teams. So it was all right, it was good. I mean, it's like a local, it's actually two or three local pitches. One AstroTurf, one like concrete, and then we used to go and play football there. So the lot from up the hill used to come down, the lot from Crouch End used to come up, or the one from Holloway. So now and again, like on a Sunday evening, for example, a lot of the team used to come from different areas just to play. And it's like two and off kind of thing. It was good. But yeah, it was nice. It was nice growing up.
I think it's important that people recognise that it doesn't matter where you come from, as long as you put the graft in. You can get to wherever you need to get to.
Exactly.
You don't always have to have money to make, to be successful. Because I'm a very similar background to yourself, come from, it was council estate. Yeah. And then through pretty much hard work, determination, I've got to where I am now.
Yeah.
May not be in the same situation as you or others, but really what success means to you as an individual. And anyone that listens to that, it really is determined by you. Really, really want to get to.
You're right.
But I mean, what sort of drove you towards the sort of property world?
Not wanting to work. Well, there's a mixture of things, but one of them was getting up. I'm not a morning person. So I had to get up 6:30 in the morning, get ready, obviously go to work. And then he had some, with a teaching one anyway, he had marking to do afterwards. So if you got like 11 or 12 classes, say you got like 10 classes, just keep it simple, and that it's like 25 people per class, but it's 250 pieces of work like to mark regularly, and you don't always get time to mark it in like school time. Sometimes you've got to take it home and then finish off a mark it. It's just a lot of work. And then if you want to get a little pay rise, like some people are striking now because inflation's high and wages are not rising with inflation, but you're asking for a little 3% pay rise, 4% pay rise, which the government may not give. That works out to maybe, I don't know, £60 a month or something like that after you get taxed and your pension and NI. £60 a month, it's like it's nothing. If I up one of my rents or two of my rents, that's covered easily, if you know what I mean. So there's a lot more easier ways to make money. So that one was one of the drivers, that not getting up early. Because some mornings now, if I don't want to get up, I just stay in bed. If I don't want to go gym, it's raining outside, it's blitz, it's snowing. You know what? I'm just staying in today. Yeah, I have that choice. Where before, you get up and you're thinking, why am I doing this? If I just want to quit my job, I just want to leave. You know what I mean? But now, I've got the freedom of time, which is good. Another thing was my initial plan, why I started, was to move out of mum's house, because I couldn't afford to move out initially on my wages. Because my Sainsbury's wage, my teaching wage, I did a bit of private tuition as well. But I done a spreadsheet and I worked out that if I'd moved out into a one bedroom flat to buy, to live in, I'd be £50 down every month. But I thought, all right, that's not too bad. But if my car broke down or if I went to go on holiday or some form of emergency, then I'm messed up for a good 2-3 months. I don't want to go to my mum or my grand and say, oh, mum, can you give me £50 or £20 or something? No, I don't want to do that. I didn't want to do that. So I thought there has to be another way of making money, like legally. So that's where it's either starting a business, stocks and shares, and now crypto nowadays, or going to property. And then property was the way that I chose. Passive income, as close to passive as you can get, really, for ones that I do. And then at least that's coming in, got capital appreciation with it as well. And the plan, the initial plan was for like what I call Armageddon, where where I didn't need to work, or if I couldn't work, and if the markets or the government, like something happened and we couldn't go out, that's where COVID come in, or credit crunch hit as well. I thought, I'm gonna put all these systems in place and make sure that through passive income, I can still maintain my level of lifestyle, still have income coming in regardless of what's going on around me. And then it's worked out like nicely. Because just after I quit my full-time job, pre-season down Hackney Marshes, ruptured my Achilles. I took about a year and a half for it to heal. About 6 months in the boot, had to have an operation. Well, they cut me open, sewed it back up, and then sewed my skin back up. Couldn't do nothing. I was just up like this. Couldn't drive my car. Both my car batteries almost went dead. Like, couldn't do nothing. So, but I was all right because I had the regular income coming in. Yeah. So I thought, test number one, done. But I was thinking, if I was still working, then it might happen. I'm not sure if I'd get a full sick pay or part sick pay. I don't know. But obviously, I quit my job. And then 4 or 5 months later, that happened. Yeah. Then, prior to that, there was a credit crunch. survived that. Then I had COVID as well. COVID come about and had to stay at home, couldn't go out. Some people who were renting, obviously like landlords, the government said, right, don't pay your rent for a few months if you can't afford it and blah, blah. But I passed that test because a lot of mine are on the guaranteed rents. People are asking me, oh, Jason, are your tenants paying? I was like, yeah, like everything's good. Only thing I can't do is go to the gym. But everything was just kosher. So I passed the test of not being able to work, recession with credit crunch, COVID, Brexit, all the systems were in place. This is what I wanted. Maintaining a level of lifestyle, regardless of what's happening in the economy and in the world, or if I can't work because of my leg, like passed it. So that's what I just planned for, basically. And it
just sort of snowballed from there to get to get more.
Yeah, yeah, basically, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I was still young when I got like quite a few, like 27, 26, when I matched my full-time wages. Like, I think it was $2,000 a month, $2,000-$3,000 a month. So I thought, you know what, I'm still young.
I think let's roll that back, because you were still working when you started investing.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But you was working at Sainsbury's and doing the maths.
Yeah.
What made you want to go and be a maths teacher?
I like maths. Initially, at uni, I went to uni for a little bit. All right, secondary school, I was all right. Primary school, I was all right. Always in top set, but I wasn't top of the top set. I was always around the middle. Mm. And then for the first year at uni, things started to click. That's the only time I was getting 100% in the tests, like differentiation, calculus, algebraic fractions, matrices, something just clicked. I was getting 100% in a lot of the tests. Mm. And then people were like, oh, can you come and help me with my maths? I need help. So I was helping them with the university level maths. And then my friend's mum, or from my friend's mum, yeah, asked me, oh, can you come and help my daughters with the GCSE maths? So I said, yeah, all right. So I helped them with it. I mean, got referred to someone else, and then someone else after that. And then, so if you're doing all right, you'll get referrals, like customer referrals. Went to do no advertising or nothing. And then it's just easy money coming in from doing that. So I got sidetracked, because my initial aim was to go into like banking or investment banking or merchant banking. But somehow, I don't know, I just got sidetracked into the teaching. And then I was like, you know what, you might as well not train to be a teacher and teach. So, well, you know what, might as well. So I went down that field, yeah. I just got sidetracked. But it wasn't my initial plan.
What would you say has been the biggest impact in your life? Up to that point?
Up until that point? Up until before I started doing properties?
Yeah.
There's not much, nothing really. Probably that was a life-changing switch, like career-wise. Sainsbury's taught me a lot. You got customer service skills. People obviously talk down to you as well, because you know, you've got a name tag on and you're putting out bread or putting out water or doing trolleys. Mm. So you get to understand people a bit more, and I don't know, the way they act, what they think of you, what they think of the job. Like corporate, like politics, because I was asked to be manager in Sainsbury's or what, like my department, because I've been there for so long, for 11 years. But I said no, because I saw how the manager were being treated by the managers above. And then you're asking for a little pay rise, and it's like, it's not worth the stress. Like, no. Just for an extra, you know what I mean? £100 a month, £200 a month. So I don't know. There wasn't any defining moment, but I just learned a lot based on the simple, basic jobs and from Sainsbury's, really. And then, yeah, it wasn't much, really. I can't say much.
No, what about sort of, again, what people have got to understand from yourself is that you've replaced your income whilst working at Sainsbury's in 11 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's hard. I mean, did you raise finance, or did you do that all from saving money and then investing?
Yeah, all from saving. Because in school, gotta go back again. In school, we used to get like a pound pocket money. So that was our actually dinner money. And then we used to obviously pay for your dinner, get your food, your drink, and then that's it, it's gone. But I thought, if I do that every day, there's no extra income coming in. So what I'd done, I started to buy multi-packs of like Coke and stuff. And then going to school, I keep one or two for myself, and then I sell the other four. And then I get £2 from those other four, 50 pence each kind of thing. So that pound has stretched me, like I've doubled it kind of thing, like 2x'd it in a way. Right. Yeah. So I got £1 for dinner, which was good, and I got £2 spare. So afterwards, I can go and buy chocolate biscuits from the shop or McBitties, the best.
Yeah.
And so Chris, you know what I mean, just feed myself. So I thought, all right, got into Sainsbury's now, and then there's no investment, because my mum didn't have much either. Just killed the overtime, because they saw that I was a hard worker. So I did overtime, night shift, because on Saturdays, used to get time and a half. Sundays were double pay. And then if you do night shift, you get night shift premium on top of that. And sometimes when you're not raving on a Saturday night, I'll do night shift. And then you're getting like good money. I say good money, but it's better money than like £3.28 an hour. Yeah. So I just stacked, done overtime and checkouts, as you know, trolleys. Then I got till trained. Then I started to do something on tills whenever they're short. Can all checkout training staff please come to the checkouts? So I go on to the checkouts. So I do overtime basically like a lot. Because sometimes I finish on a Friday at 9:30 or whatever. Then night shift manager comes, oh, so-and-so's phoned in sick. Have you got any staff members? And then my manager look at me. I'm thinking, oh, should I do it? Should I not do it? So sometimes I do my shift from 5:30 to 9:30. And then I do night shift from 10 until 7. But the problem was sometimes I had to be back in at Saturday mornings for 6 to put the bread out. So sometimes I'd clock out for half an hour, go into the canteen, just chill for a minute, and then come back down and do my morning shift, which was from 6:30 to 2:30, putting out the bread. So sometimes what happened with HR, they would see this, that I worked, clock in and clock out. So they saw that I clocked in for 4 hours, had a half an hour break, done night shift, clocked out, and then clocked back in from 6:30 to 2:30. They're thinking, no, someone's clocking in for Jason, like, just to get some extra money. So a lot of the time I had to get signed up by my manager because they didn't believe that I'd done like all them kind of shifts kind of thing.
Mm.
So I was just stacking. I mean, that's that plus the tuition money is what I used to get my first property, yeah, going forward. So no JVs, no loans from family members or friends, just stacked hard work, which is the hardest way nowadays rather than going forward, and then just use that. Got my first one and then went up in value, plus I get a rental income, yeah. Plus I was in Sainsbury's, plus I was doing maths tuition, and I started work at the college as well.
Mm.
So I had like 5 different incomes coming in. So that stacked for me again to get another one.
Mm.
And then, like I said, within 18 months, that one went up by about, I think it's like 18-19% or something like that at the time. So I took out about 30-35 grand out of it. The first one, plus my savings, plus Sainsbury's, plus the college money, plus the rental income from the first one. And then I was able to buy another 4 with that money. Because at the time, you could put down 15% deposits.
Right, yeah. Okay. And that was in London?
Yeah, in London. Yeah.
Shit.
And then for my own one, I put down 5% deposit, which is 100 grand for my first residential one-bedroom flat. So I put down 5 grand for it with the Halifax. And then that was all right. And then the other ones, I had to put down 15% deposit. But they're a bit cheaper, so I built up towards that.
Mm.
So first one I bought for 70,000. And then the ones after that were about 80, 85,000, 90,000. And the one, by the time I bought my residential one to move out, that one was 100,000. One bedroom flat, 5% deposit. So, but I built up. Mm. I mean, just win it myself. So self-funding, basically. Yeah, but I didn't know about JVs and...
No.
And bridging finance, and I didn't know any of that. No one taught me that. No one told me anything. So only when you get further down the line, that's when I understood that, oh, you can get bridging. Oh, you can do BRR.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you can do short leases. Oh, you can do reconfiguring. No one told me any of this. I was just buying and renting it out. But there's no one around to tell me, so. But then as you get older, you just learn.
And then obviously it leads me nicely onto the shortlist, which is, again, a lot of people know you for that.
Yeah.
So when did you discover the shortlist strategy, if you will? Because a lot of people try it and get it horribly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, what are the dangers?
Mm-hmm.
And can you explain how we should approach this, if you could?
Yep. Yeah, because I do some mentoring this anyway, like one-to-one mentoring. So... I'll tell you how I started anyway, but as you probably heard from before. So I started buying flats because houses were too expensive in my area. So I thought I had to start buying, but only flats. And then most flats have leases on them.
Mm.
So after the credit crunch, I think it was about between 2010 and 2012, BM Solutions, or Birmingham Midshires nowadays, they restricted their lending. I had about 7 or 8 with them, and then after that they said that he couldn't refinance. Well, I couldn't refinance anymore because their limit was down to like 3 buy-to-lets or 4 buy-to-lets at the time. So you can stay with us, went into the variable rate, which is like 0.99 above base rate, but I was happy because rates just went straight down to the amount of money I was making like per property. He's like, oh, are you changing to a fixed deal? I'm like, nah, I'm staying on the variable rate. Yeah. I'm not changing over. And interest rate's like 0.something%, you know what I mean? I'm paying peanuts. So, but they said, yeah, you can't take any funds because we've changed our criteria now. You only allowed, I think, like I said, 3 buy-to-lets with us. But you have 7 or 8, it's fine, you can stay, but no further lending. So I thought, all right, because the interest rates are so good, and I'm making big chunks of cash per month after the rental, like mortgage being paid, I'm just leaving it. But then I thought, you know what, let me just take 4 of them out and move them over to TMW, which is the mortgage works. So I did that. 3 of them had decent leases, which is above 80 years. And then the last one had a lease, which was, I think, 71 years. Or was it 70 years? And now, because of that, the surveyor from Connell said, oh, I don't think TMW will release the 30 grand out of this one for you. So I was like, is it? So yeah, because the lease is below 80 years, it's a bit short. So what you'd have to do is go get the lease extended, get it registered with Land Registry, and then send over the documentation to TMW, and then we'll release the rest of the funds for you. I said, okay, that's fine. So I've done that. With that particular one, actually, I wrote to the freeholder, asking them for a quote for the lease extension, voluntary lease extension, and also put in, will you be willing to sell me the freehold? And with that one, they sold the freehold, which was good.
So you got the freehold for that?
Yeah. Oh, wow. So section 10, you got to tell the other flats in the block that the freehold is about to be sold. And if you want in, then you can come in. If not, you're made aware of it by the section 10 notice that someone's going to buy it. It's changing hands. So the flat upstairs, because the conversion, a flat, used to be a house, but it's converted into 2 separate flats. Mm-hmm. So I said, yep, I'm buying it. But I asked the flat upstairs if they were in or not. They said, yeah, they've got the money. Let's go. So we bought it for like 17 and a half grand, I think it was. Bought the freehold. We paid like, is it 6.5, 8.5, 7.5 each, something like that, plus legals. And now we're on the freehold. And then what we did, we extended our own leases for a nil fee. So we put 999 for each of our leases after that. We went back to TMW. Send over documentation, then they release the rest of the funds. So I was like, oh, and it's a good idea. So I started looking around for flats with short leases.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And then I started to learn the process. Because whenever I saw cash buyers only on the description on Rightmove, I'm thinking, oh, you need to have cash. Mm. Nah. You can get a buy-to-let mortgage on it. Yeah. So if it's 68 years or 72-year lease on it, which is obviously below the marriage value of 80 years, I thought you couldn't get a mortgage on it. Went to my broker, I said, yeah, you can get a mortgage on it. There's loads of them, like Lambay, Kensington, the mortgage works, if it's above 70 years, got the mortgage lender, got Keystone Mortgages, Foundation Home Loans, Capital Home Loans, Kent Reliance, Precise, Paragon go to 70 years. So there's all these lenders that will lend to you on a normal buy-to-let mortgage, but it's a short mortgage. So if you're releasing like 68 years and you're buying it for 68 years, they would give you a 17-year mortgage, for example, at a normal buy-to-let rate. Yeah. So I just started buying then. I mean, as you know already, it's like the paper version of the BRR. Mm. So you buy it, you extend the lease, then that creates uplifting value. So that alone creates an uplifting value. And it's less work. Just sign a few papers, obviously negotiate with the freeholder, either by doing a Section 42 notice or a voluntary lease extension notice. And then you extend the lease. And then you can just pull out your funds after 6 months. Or if you're doing a bridging, you can release it like straight away.
So for some people that don't know what the Section 42 is, do you have to serve that or... Does they have to serve it? What's the best situation?
Yeah, it's best that the solicitor serves it. So if this is more to do with auction ones though, and some if you're buying through Rightmove as well, I suppose. But if you look in the legal pack, for example, at an auction, if it's got obviously a lease on it, I put it on my Instagram like 2 posts ago, I think, and it's got a Section 42 notice will be issued or by the vendor. So the vendor serves it on your behalf. Mm-hmm. And then when you get the keys, it's assigned over to yourself.
Yep.
And then you finish off the process. And if you have a competent solicitor, then that should take about 5-6 weeks to go through. Mm. And then he's got sent, get sent off to land registry to be registered. So that's the, but with that section 14 notice, you have to own the flat for at least 2 years before you can serve it. If you own the flat and it's under 2 years, you have to do a voluntary lease extension. And the freeholder can always say no to extending it. But the ones that I do, a lot of the time, it's never happened where they've refused a lease extension because it's small numbers, like 15 grand, 20 grand, 25 grand to extend the lease. Mm. And a lot of them want the money now. If someone's saying to you, offering you, I want to extend my lease now, it's going to cost you 25 grand. I'm not going to say, oh, wait 2 years to give me 25 grand. No, I'm like, I want it now. A lot of them want it now. The ones where there's issues, the ones in central London, we might have to go to a tribunal or there's big disputes between yourself and the freeholder. Those six-figure ones are the ones where you get most issues with, because that's like big money. It's 400,000, 500,000 to extend the lease, especially if it's part of the Grosvenor estate as well, like the Queen's or the Royal Family's like estate. Because them ones, you can only extend by 20 years or maybe by 25 years max.
Okay.
But it's going to cost you 400,000, 500,000, 600,000. But those flats will go up to 1.2, 1.3 million after you extend the lease. Sometimes you might see him in auction.
Yeah,
exactly. So on Clubhouse, not last year, I think the year before that, we went through a live example of a classic audio app.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we went through a live example on here of a flat in Mayfair. So Ricky was looking at the comparables. I was doing the maths. I think Mensa was doing like some other like exchange rate value. He was going to rent it out basically and reconfigure it. So we seen one available for, I think it was like 250,000 or so. And then eventually it sold at auction for 300,000. Right? Along that road, it's one bedroom flat. Those flats are worth 1.2, 1.3 million. All right? The lease extension cost for that one, I think, would have been about 600K. So it's 300K to buy it, 600K for the lease extension, and then that brings up to about roughly 900K. Then end value is like 1.2, 1.3 million. So you could effectively make a good 300, 400K, but it's big numbers to deal with. And the funding, or the way to pay for the lease extension, the way that we did it was to rent it as an SA, because it's in central London, in Mayfair. So we configure it, one bed to a two bed, do up nicely, and then rent it out as an SA. And then for the first 2.5, 3 years, that SA money, plus a little bit of savings, will be a nice chunk towards paying off for the lease extension. And then after that, you either sell it or you refinance it and then just go again. But it's a bit of a delayed, like,
profit. Yeah, when you start, I suppose when you start going into bigger extensions, that's, you've got to start thinking, right, okay, there's more profit here.
Yeah, yeah.
But you've got to start somewhere.
Exactly.
A situation I've actually found myself in before is the freeholder died.
Okay, yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, what would you do in that situation where I've looked to buy somewhere, this was in Essex, and how much we looked to buy it for? It was actually down the road I'd sold a house for. We made a very good profit on this one. And this was up for, I think it was around near the £200,000 mark. And the extension was only 25 grand.
Yeah, yeah.
And it would have gone, it was worth well over 250 grand.
Mm-hmm.
Well over, and as it was.
Yeah.
And it was 50 grand below market value. And it needed work doing, would have gone for a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you do in that situation?
Yeah, that being the executors. So say that person's obviously passed down to their son or grandchildren or whatever. So whoever's taken over control, if they have a will, by the way, if they have a will, it's easier. If they don't have a will, then it's problems.
Yeah, that's what I found, mate. Yeah, because I'm going on find a will. I'm trying to find out who owns this house, because there's a lot of money sitting in that.
Exactly.
There's like well over 100 grand sitting in this house.
Did I have... An executor?
No.
No, nothing?
No, I'm trying to find out.
All right.
Well, they don't believe, obviously the agent doesn't believe. They've got a will. Otherwise, they'd find out. Because they're obviously trying to sell it.
Yeah.
Already bought one down that road.
Yeah.
And they're going, oh, no, we can't find them. But if we do,
Yeah, so what's going to have to happen then is, there's companies that can help you anyway, but yeah, it's going to go via probate. Find out whoever's looking after the probate of that place. Mm. If that person hasn't got a will and they haven't got any so-called like close relatives, then that property's probably might even go to the government.
Well, so someone that's living there,
yeah,
she's selling.
Okay.
However, the freeholder of the property, you've got to notify them.
Yeah, and they've died.
And they've died.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But who's... Yeah.
So we need to extend the lease.
Yeah.
So she can't sell it at all. Mm-hmm. So she's in a predicament as well.
Yeah, exactly. You got to find out who's executor for that person.
So she can't... And again, that's important for people to realise is that if you buy a house, even to live in, without looking at it as an investment, whether it be a flat, you want to... If you buy a house to live in and it is only a flat, you've got to make sure that the lease has got, I would say, 80 years plus.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably
yeah.
90 years to be on the safe side.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, yeah, this lady's in a very awkward position now because she can't extend the lease, even if she wanted to. Mm. And now she can't sell it.
Mm.
Yeah, it's not a nice situation yeah, exactly. to be in.
You can get insurance, like indemnity insurance, in case the freeholder turns up. Obviously not going to turn up. But whoever claims the property going forward... Like you're covered by this indemnity insurance. But step number one, you got to find out who is the next person in line to receive that property after they've died. So that's to go through probate. And then once you've gone through probate, if no one's come forward, then that's an issue. That can go to the government. Like I said, if a cousin or a distant cousin or a relative or family member comes forward and has taken possession of it, then speak to them. Or their solicitors direct, but it's a long process to wait for though.
Yeah, no, it's not. Yeah. It's obviously we moved on from that particular one, but it's just, it's an interesting question to put to yourself. I don't know if you've ever come across that one.
No, I haven't. No.
Trust me to come across that one. But,
exactly.
Yeah, but it's very important for people to realise that if the freeholder was to, obviously one answer, that's a common one I've come across, is like, no, and we're going to put the premium up to 40 grand you can negotiate. It's important for people to understand that you've got to negotiate. If you feel that it's worth 25 grand, for example, or 20 grand. And I think it's important as well, they will try and get a stupid amount off of you.
Yeah.
Because they feel that they can. Mm-hmm. They'll just make a price up.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you do in a situation like that? Obviously, we'll discuss peppercorn ground rent. Yeah. As well, and I'll let you say that away. So I don't want to say that.
Yeah,
you discuss
with. Yeah, no. What I've found with some of the flats, if it's a small flat, well, look, I say a small block, and it's an individual like you or myself that own it, their premiums are quite reasonable in terms of what they're trying to offer you. If you're dealing with a larger company and they've got like thousands of or hundreds of flats on their books, then them ones try and fleece you a bit more.
Yeah.
So what I've found is with one of them, this was a two bed, I think it was like 71, 72 years lease on it. They were charging like 22 grand for it. But I got one in that block already. I was like, that's a bit too high. I was expecting around 15, 16K. So we were going back and forth. This was a voluntary one and they weren't budging. So I had to get my lease extension guy involved. He went around there, done a 22 page report. Like £700 plus VAT. And then he sent that off to the freeholder, to the freeholder's solicitor, surveyor, And then after they've read that, they've come down in price to 15.5K. So I've paid my extra, like £700 plus VAT for his services, but he saved myself, I don't know, five grand-ish, something like that, overall. So it's worth it. So you have to get a reputable lease extension guy or woman involved. Get them to do the report and then let them send it off for you as well. And if need be, they can negotiate on your behalf if you can't do the negotiating or you've come to like your tether in that sense. But this guy, he's been in the game for like 30 odd years. So I think he's well known in the lease extension industry. So whatever he says, he's got some weight behind it, him. Yeah. So that one, that's the only one where I've had a little dispute with the freeholder. All the other ones, I negotiated a little bit and I've got it down by about 2-3 grand. But it's all small ones that I'm dealing with, between 15 and 25K. So nothing like heavy. But Yeah, and I've agreed peppercore ground rent as well, which means zero ground rent. With a new law that's coming, which you know already, on the 30th of June, 2022, any new lease extension should come with peppercorn ground rent, right? Now, what that means is, say you have 70 years left on your lease and then you extend it by 90 years, the new 90 years, once the 7 years is finished, will have peppercorn ground rent. But the current 70 years, they're allowed to still charge you the ground rent for those 70 years. Mm. But even before the 30th of June, I was still doing this anyway. So all of the new leases that I was doing, I was doing peppercorn ground rent from day one, not from when the 70 years expires. Mm. Yeah, so that's what I've always done. I'm still going to be doing it going forward as well. Yeah, so negotiate a new lease, 90 years above what it is now, or 125, or up to 99, but peppercorn ground rent from day one. Yeah, not from the start of a new lease extension part of it.
Very important for people to recognise that and listen to and take you up on that advice, because you could be paying for additional money when you don't necessarily you don't need to be. Because they will fleece you. They will try and earn more money out of you where they can.
Exactly.
What else do we need to know about short leases? I don't want to keep going around on that, but it's such a profitable strategy that people try and can get stung on, I believe. Because it's thrown out there by training companies, training providers, and I think there's a common misconception that you can earn a lot of money out of it, that people don't really know how to do the numbers, if I'm honest. Whilst you will have a property that may need, you can add value to it, you can do your general refurb, but then you've got your lease extension.
Exactly.
And not a lot of people would know how to do the numbers on that. You're never going to know if it's 15 grand or 30 grand. But you've got to factor in the refurb cost. You've got to factor in your legal costs.
Exactly.
Legal costs of the sale.
Yeah.
And then your lease extension.
Exactly.
What else do we need to know and factor in if it was your first one? I don't think you should be scared doing it.
Yeah.
I just think you need to be very aware of the costs associated.
Exactly. Because normally I work with the initial price and then I adjust it to what I want to offer the actual vendor afterwards. But just for argument's sake, there was one, I put part of it on my Instagram, I think. But it won for like 140,000 at auction. But you can also put in pre-auction offers, or if it doesn't sell, you can put in after post-auction offers as well. But 140,000, we found out roughly what the lease extension costs will be. So you can do that by using an online calculator to start with. Use about two or three different ones to get a rough idea. I emailed my lease extension guy, it's a surveyor, and he comes back with an accurate quote as well, because he's got the calculator, all the spreadsheet on his computer. So his one's like dead accurate. So he's like my secret weapon. And then, so I've got that there. And if there's a Section 40 notice in there as part of a legal pack, or if it's on the open market, then if their agent can ask the vendor if they've had an idea of how much it will cost. So those are the three main ways. But Andrew's like the main guy that I get my quotes from, along with the lease extension calculator just to back it up. Yeah. So just for argument's sake, this one is 20 grand to extend it based on the research that I've done. So 140 plus 20 grand to extend it. Then you got to pay for your legals, the freeholders' legals, and the surveyor, lease extension surveyor, if need be. So roughly about 3.5 grand-ish. So let's just say like 25 grand, in total. And then you've got stamp duty to pay for. Then you've got the purchasing costs of the property itself, like you mentioned. So all of that might come to about, let's say 4,200 for the 140 grand, that's 3% stamp duty, plus 1.5 for legals, looking at about 5.7, and then maybe a little bit of other little bits, just say like 10 grand, just to make it like simple, So 140 plus the 10, that's 150, plus the 25, that's, 195-ish, something like that, So you, in theory, would want that flat to be worth a minimum of like 235, 240 minimum, if you're looking for that 20 to 25% kind of uplift, if possible. So if the flat in that area doesn't really go for that kind of value, then you need to come down in price and offer maybe 130, 125-ish, and men adjust accordingly towards your end value. So that, so if you're going like 130-ish or 125, then that end value of the flat can be around 220, 225 possibly, and you're still making your margins. So so I'll start off with what the actual price is, do all of those things what I said, look at the end value, and if it's realistic based on the comps in that area, then great. If it's not, then I have to come down, back down the ladder, and then that will determine my asking price, what the asking price should be in order to go forward.
I think it's a very sensible way. I mean, I do it in a very similar way, but I will start with always the end in mind.
Yeah.
What is it at the end value?
Yeah.
And then I'll just go, right, bang, 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 work my way through, and I'll go, right, that's my offer. But yeah, it's a very, very similar way of doing it, mate. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much covered everything about the property. Thanks very much for doing that. Guys, if you ever want to reach out to Jason about the property stuff, he does a lot of mentoring on it. I think you've recently started that, haven't you?
Yeah, about 8 months, 8 months-ish. Because people keep on asking me, oh, what do you do this? Because I do a lot of tuition anyway, like one-to-one tuition. I've been doing that for a long time for maths. So I thought, you know what, let me just do some one-to-one Zooms with the property individuals. So I get them started in the property game. Put up a plan. Then we're like, oh, I got 20 grand, I got 30 grand, but I don't know what to do with it. So basically we just go through all of the options, whether it's BRR, whether it's short leases, whether you buy inside London, whether you buy outside London, like in Liverpool, Doncaster. Just go through all the options, and then I'll leave that with them and say, right, whatever you think is best for you and your situation, you choose. And then also do like one-to-ones with like what we just mentioned just there. I found a property at auction. I've seen it for this price. Can go through the figures to make sure I'm doing it right. So I'm putting an online like offer going forward. And then I've got other people that want to do a BRR. Some guys have got like 600 grand and he wants me to help him spend it wisely. Like what's the best, most effective way of doing that? So I'm helping people in that sense. So some of them are just one-offs. Some of them is ongoing, like once a month. So they're held like accountable for their actions, like homework in a way. So I say, right, what have we done last month? Oh, I phoned up the agent. I looked at 50 properties, went to go and view 10 of them. So it's like homework, basically.
Yeah.
And then the other side of it is those ones, I've given them that 1 hour Zoom and it's gone well. And I've had two or three sessions and they're thinking, you know what? I need you to hold my hand all the way through. So that's the other side of the mentoring ones, where I take them through every single thing, like as if I'm buying it, and then I help them with everything, like buying it, extending the lease, if they want to reconfigure it, one bed to two bed, two bed to two, to three bed, help them with that, help them with the refurb if they need to. If they're not flipping it or selling it afterwards, then also help them with the rental part of it as well. So I set up the rental element as well, like guaranteed rents, or if they want on open market, it's fine. So help them with a whole shebang for that for a fee.
Again, that's something that we haven't touched on, and we won't. And I know the guys will probably string me up for that, but I don't want to cover too much on the property because I'd love to have you back. But I want to talk to you about your family, because what people may not see is that you're a real family man. And I love that because I am as well. I can only presume, and tell me if I'm wrong, but you do this a lot. A lot of the reason you do this is because your family, you spend time with your family.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the freedom of time. Because, you know, when you're younger, or you might hear the elders speak, or other people speak, I mean, say, oh, my mum or my dad was at work all the time, so I never saw them. But they've built a nice life for us. Like, I listened to the Hartley interview. They got the cars, and the exclusive cars. But Tom said his dad was always working. He never saw him. It's part of the family business now, and they get on a bit more now. Same with Alan Sugar. He never saw his sons much because he was always out working. So I thought, all right, I just took it in. And I thought, all right, when I get a bit older and I start to have children, if possible, I want to try and be around a bit more. Obviously, it's still going to make money, but I want to try and be at home a bit more. I don't want to be out working 8 to 8 shifts and then come home and then the baby's sleeping or your child's sleeping, so I miss them. And then you see them on like weekends. So now I've created the opportunity where I have that opportunity. I can go to the school, play, if I want to, or if they got a football match on a Sunday morning down Hackney Marshes. Yeah. Yeah. But I can go and like be there kind of thing because I don't have work or, you know what I mean? So it's flexible. Obviously, I still do some math lessons now, but I can just, if they got a school play or an event,
anything,
birthday, I can just say, I'm going with you or I'm coming with you or I'll bring you. Whereas if you're working full time, you have to ask your boss. If a school plays at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon or 2:30 in the afternoon, like Christmas carols or like school panto, sometimes it's hard for you to ask your boss, oh, can I leave? I have to go and watch my daughters play. Sure about that. We're quite busy. Can't give you the time off. So at least with the property, you got the flexibility of controlling your life, your free time.
Is that something that you had with your mum growing up?
Yeah, she worked a lot. So I didn't really see it as much. So she's doing some hard shifts like 8 or 6 to 6 actually sometimes. And then, or 8 to 8. So the same sort of thing. So she was out like working. So I was just home, just on my J's.
and that has given you the entrepreneurial sort of mindset to obviously create this for your family.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. So I changed the mindset, try and be at home a bit more if possible. Just to see those kids grow up. Because you always say, oh, my kids are growing up. I didn't really get to see them grow up.
Yeah.
But I want to try and be around a bit more just to see them grow up.
Yeah. I mean, again, another fascinating thing about yourself is you've remained focused on what you want to achieve and not easily sidetracked. Like you said, you got sidetracked with the maths. But I would say you've remained focused on it because it's one thing that you enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of shiny pennies out there that you could have got sidetracked too.
Yeah.
And you didn't. You've remained focused on it. And I am certainly guilty of this, is once I've accomplished one thing, I'll move on to something else.
Yeah. New challenge.
New challenge, whatever that
bigger
may be.
Challenge.
Big, yeah, it has to be bigger. Not necessarily bigger. And actually, the guest I had yesterday, very good friend of mine, business partner, is that I've got to set a goal. And I went, do you know what? Don't set yourself a goal because you'll feel worse when you've accomplished it. Set yourself an objective. Because you can always create sort of a bigger objective and then you can move that. Don't feel bad when you've not accomplished it, but you don't feel necessarily as good when you've accomplished it.
Yeah.
And it's just went, actually, yeah. Because the objective changes.
Mm-hmm.
It could be in property, it could be in business, it could be family, right? Whatever that may be. But the objective always changes.
True. You're right.
But looking at yours, it's gone from, again, living from where you've come from to sort of where you are now, the objective is the same, to spend more time with your family. And you do. You can see that on your social media platforms. And that's what matters to you.
Yeah.
Obviously, I was going to say what motivates you, but you can see your family.
It. Yeah, you've got to take over the empire one day. I told him. Well, even though he obviously can't understand me, but I said, all right, if we continue to buy like 2-3 properties a year, by the time he gets to 20, he's going to have like close to 100 properties to look after. So even if he wants to go to university or go on his own little path, like whether he wants to do music or investment banking or a vet, whatever, on the side, you have to help out with the family business a little bit, just a little bit.
And they're all owned?
Yeah.
And you've done that in how many years?
21 years now.
21 years, nearly be 100 properties.
Yeah.
And that's from
but by the time he gets to 20.
Oh, well, how many do you own now?
Close to 30, about 30-ish.
And that's all your own money?
Yeah.
Fuck it, that's ridiculous. That's good.
Yeah.
You should be really proud of yourself.
I just start with flats anyway. Flats, it's easier. It's obviously in London, it's a bit kind of expensive anyway. I could have had more if I was buying outside London or in the outskirts of London. But because the bigger deposits, like it's minimum 50 to 70 grand a time, like going forward. So, but I could, outside London, I could have had like hundreds, you know what I mean? But it's all right.
What about the sort of like work-life balance if there is one? I don't believe there is, if I'm honest. But how have you managed that with a family?
It works in bursts. Like some weeks, there's a lot to do. I mean, other weeks, there's nothing. Like, it's just dead. So, like it varies. Like, recently, I've got some purchases going through and I'm buying through a limited company for the first time. You had to get the guarantor, the guarantee signed by another solicitor. I know about that. The mortgage company wanted me to amend the memorandum of articles for the limited company. Because I'm a sole director, they wanted me to amend them. Exactly. That's what my accountant said. My accountant said, are you sure? He was like, yeah. So their solicitors, because their solicitors represent the mortgage company. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it has to be on their panel of lenders, panel of solicitors, sorry.
Yeah.
So I had to use one of them. He's like, because you're a sole director and sole secretary and just you, I have to amend it. So I didn't know about this. So I had to print off the memorandum of articles, amend 7 and 11 to show that, what is it called again? Is it decorum or something like that?
that just sounds ridiculous.
Yeah. So I had to do that. All these things I didn't know because I buy under my personal name a lot of the time. But I was like, it's a lot of work. a lot of work. But I don't know. Once you do it once and then start going forward, it gets a bit easier in that sense. Yeah.
I love it, mate, because you're just calm.
Mm.
And a lot of people that obviously come to myself and want to get started in property, they're just like, I want to come and do this. I've got this much money. But what if this happens? Well, you haven't fucking done it yet.
No.
You've created a problem that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But you would just come and do it.
Yeah.
And worry about it after.
Mm.
If it happens, it happens. If it don't, it don't.
That's my motto, yeah. Same. Because that's what I found. When I first started, I just went and bought one.
Mm.
Yeah. But I didn't think, oh, shall I not?
Yeah.
Shall I wait a little bit? Is the market there? Just went and bought it. I mean, what I'm finding now, a lot of the people that I meet, not a lot of them, but some of them, pre-COVID, pre-Brexit, shall I wait? Because of Brexit, prices might drop.
Mm.
Not going to buy it. I'll wait till next year. Prices creeping up.
Mm.
COVID, prices definitely going to drop. They're going to crash. I'm not buying yet. I'm going to wait like 6 months. What happened? Prices went like that over COVID. Mm. I mean, like, oh, you know what? I should have just bought. So I don't just, if you're in it long term, then you'll be all right. Yes, there might be a little dip. So you might buy at, not towards the peak or approaching the peak possibly, it's hard to say, but then it might dip a little bit, but then over time, it's going to make up and it's going to surpass where you actually bought it for.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I wouldn't worry about it too much. As long as you're making X amount per month, if that's your goal, like cash flow per month, that's what was my initial goal, cash flow per month to replace my wages, and you're in it long term, then you'll be all right. Just do it. What's the worst that can happen? Like, you just rent out afterwards, hold it long term, as long as it's not a new build, by the way.
don't go new build.
Yeah, exactly. As long as it's not a new build, then you're all right. Just hold it long term, get your rental income coming in. You can't really lose.
And the thing is, like, what I say to people is, don't worry about what other people are doing.
Yeah, exactly.
And again, that's what you do really well from what I've seen. And obviously, speaking to you now, you get that impression is that you don't really give a shit what other people are doing.
Yeah.
And you're in your own lane, you're doing what you're doing. Whether anyone else is doing short leases, it doesn't really matter because you know what you want to do. It's not just short leases that you do.
Exactly.
You do the BRR method.
Yeah.
You'll do a standard buy to let.
Yeah.
You may do a development, but... You don't care what other people are doing. And I think so many people are consumed by, right, what's on Instagram, let's say, right, I can make £100,000 on a flip if I do this. You've not bought a house.
Exactly.
Go and buy a house
first.
Go and experience what it's like.
Yeah.
If you want to do, I want to do SA. You don't, as your first one.
Yeah.
Just buy a house first. Well, you might want to, but you need to experience the process.
Understand it, yeah.
But yeah, I think there's so many people that are consumed by this glamorous lifestyle that people say they live, but don't always.
Exactly. That's what I find as well on social media, actually.
Yeah.
I've been to some of these events and then like property events. And then, like you said, you see some of these guys and you're thinking, oh, they're doing really well. And then when you hear, speak to someone else or speak to them, it's not fully the same way.
No, it's not.
It's portrayed differently.
Yeah.
So it seems like a bit more, you know, like fake it till you make it kind of thing. It's that, yeah, yeah, that's basically,
a lot of these, well, again, the training companies probably make more money out of the training. Well, they do make more money out of the training than they do the actual properties. They probably earn, well, I would say, and this is a punt, I don't actually know this, they probably do more developments, probably one or two developments a year, than earn, or sorry, own property.
True.
Because the amount of money that the guys pay them to train them,
exactly,
they'll pump that money into a development, maybe one or two a year. And it would make sense for them to do that.
That's it.
Rather than, say, myself or you going to buy a normal vanilla buy-to-let. But don't forget, guys, that cash flows. And it will stay there. You have to be reactive and go and find a new plot. Don't get me wrong, getting paid nice chunks of money is great. But if that's not what you want to do,
that's it.
Stay in your lane.
Exactly.
Stay in your lane. Yeah. I said the same to another guest. I mean, you may know him, James Zahota.
He
stays in his lane.
Yeah.
He don't come out.
Yeah.
If he wants to, he will. And then he'll come back in. But he's very focused on what he was to do.
Exactly. Especially with the flats. Not many people like flats because you've got service charge, you've got ground rent. You have to answer to the management company sometimes. But people don't like that. But I don't mind it because... Bringing my cash flow per month, it's all right. So I don't bother with people.
We had one, and do you know what? You could. It was a shame because the reason we had to sell the one I just bought. It's such a shame because it works perfect.
Major charges, major works charges.
We had that, but as well, we had. I was going to turn into service accommodation because that's the background, and it was right by the seafront. And I thought the issue was with the management company.
Yeah.
You could have sneezed loud. And there would have been a complaint.
Right.
Do you know what? What can I sell it for? Because I can't be bothered with I slam a door. Someone slams a door and we get a complaint. Because you can imagine with SA.
Yeah, exactly. It's
going
to be worse.
It's going to be an issue.
Yeah. Best to buy a house, they're going to do it an SA in that sense.
Yeah.
And then, or even if the house is two flats, top floor, bottom floor, they're all right, or just buy a house and rent it as an SA rather than...
100%.
Yeah.
But to be fair, on that one, we made a nice profit.
That's right.
And then we reinvested them. We've done exactly the same thing with somewhere else.
Okay.
But it was a shame because it literally was a stone's throw away.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was just a shame. But, what was your biggest achievement?
I think just being able to leave work, successfully. And what I said, planning for Armageddon, because that was my plan. I didn't know, I was planning for Armageddon, but I didn't know what Armageddon, in what form Armageddon came. But it came in COVID, like I said, came in Brexit, came in a credit crunch, and my business systems functioned, flourished fully all throughout those periods. So I was happy. That's what I was planning for. So I don't know. My biggest achievement probably just getting enough cash to leave work and maintain the level of lifestyle that I've got now and just feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Just give yourself the freedom of time. So you have the choice to do what you want. You can work for fun. Can go and play football. I have to start playing PlayStation again soon. FIFA with the little one. I'm retired, but I'm about to get back into it again now because he obviously gets older. Just having the freedom there, just options, going on holiday when you want.
Yeah.
If I want to give myself a pay rise, then I can. If I just increase the rent slightly, no need to go on the picket lines. We want more. We want more. It's you look back and you're thinking, if only I'd known kind of thing. But I don't know, just that basically, and trying to help people move forward, just see the light, just have something on the side. Even if they want to leave employment, that's fine. Just have something secure on the side. I think COVID woke up a lot of people. A lot of people, they thought, right, I'm indispensable. My employers got rid of me because I couldn't work from home. I've been put onto universal credit. I had to restructure my job or restructure the company. Structured the jobs, you had to reapply for your own job, made redundant. It's just a big mess, a big mess.
Yeah.
But at least you've got your own thing there,
Passive
income coming in. You're in control. No need to worry about employers changing. For example, I don't know if you know Yanomines, with the cars.
He
wraps the cars. He's moving over to Urban. Up in Milton Keynes, that's been their successful business 15 years, I think, something like that. A lot of them staff probably thought, "Yeah, I got a job for life." Not a lot of job for life, but job for a long time. It's secure, yeah. And then the lease on that property's come up, and I'm assuming that the rents have doubled or at least close to double because you have to renew it every so often. And then he decided to move to Milton Keynes. So the staff members now have to start looking for other jobs. And you see all the time on social media thinking, yeah, that's a nice job to have and blah, blah. But all of a sudden, because of something that's out of Yanni's control, like rent increases and so forth, he has to move or potentially move, which he's done. So that staff, which is gone, is dispersed. It's a new team now, new team up in Milton Keynes. So that's in your employer's hands. But I'd rather, I like it to be in my hands. I want to be in control rather than someone else's. Suppose you can't find a job straight away, or suppose you started a new business now after a bit and it doesn't go according to plan, then you're in trouble. Energy bills rising, you've got the mortgage costs to pay as well because the interest rates have gone up. You find yourself in financial difficulty. But it's not your fault. It's not the employer's fault either. It's just that landlords, people like me, you know what I mean? It's us. we're causing it, but you know what I mean?
blame the government.
It's true.
What's the best advice you've ever received?
I think AJ, back in the day when I was, when I went into the agency, the estate agent, I said I wanted to buy like 4 properties in one go. He took me under his wing a little bit and showed me the way, because he showed me a little bit about BRR and reconfiguring, how to pull your money out and use that to either grow or fund your lifestyle. So what he told me back then opened my eyes to property a bit more. Like I said, I didn't know about BRR. I was like, what? You can do that? Like, I didn't know. So not just one piece of advice, but he's the one that gave me property advice in general and opened my eyes to it as well, like moving forward. So in my head, I started to formulate strategies and plans so I could move forward and just progress in the property game. Yeah.
Wicked, mate. And what about, what is a life well lived for you?
All right, this could be a long one. I know you've got a short time now, but I read the book, Tony Robbins' book, and in his book, you've got different sections, obviously. You've got financial independence, you've got financial freedom, and you have ultimate financial freedom. So I made a spreadsheet. All right, I'll just give you like a little overview. Financial independence is like when you're making enough money to pay for your bills, like utility bills, your mortgage or your rent, your council tax, all the basics. And after that, financial freedom, start to build in things like gym, 2 holidays a year, a decent car, maybe 2 city breaks to abroad, like in Europe. And then you start to build up your cash flow and what you need to do, and you move over to the ultimate financial freedom section. So now I'm in that section there. So at the moment, I've got options of living like the best life. So you can go on 4 big holidays a year, yeah? Can't at the moment because a little one, but I mean, you've got a minimum of like 4 city breaks to like Germany or Italy or Milan or whatever it is, yeah? To stay at the Armani Hotel, nice hotel over there. Went to Portugal for like 4 or 5 days, just the small ones. Then you got the big ones like Dubai or Jamaica, yeah? So that's all on there. Buying the car that you want, yeah? So I bought my nice car, got the second car as well. So on that list is the blueprint for you to live or lead your best life from that ultimate financial freedom spreadsheet. So, but the ultimate aim is to have the freedom of time. That's the ultimate aim.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, but yeah, from then it's all listed, basically.
That makes sense. Makes complete sense.
Yeah.
What about the happiest moment of your life? What's that mean?
Probably when a little one was born.
Yeah. Do you know what? Every dad that's ever been asked that question said the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm the same, mate. It's,
how many have you got kids?
Oh, 3.
3, okay, right. 3,
yeah, I've been busy, mate.
Hold on.
Well, I mean, what's something that you no longer value that you feel that other people do?
All right, I still value money, but it's not as important as before. So I'm doing deals, and then obviously I'm making profit per month. But I don't really, it's not about the money anymore. It's just, I know other people be like, yeah, I want to make this, want to make that. But I just want to, I don't know, just build a portfolio still rather than that. I've got the minimum point, like the minimum amount now. So I don't need any more, but I just keep going anyway. If you know what I mean. So I don't really value money as much. I should, but I don't really value money as much. I just value time more than anything. That's the most valuable commodity, time.
Yeah.
Before, it's about money, 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 money. Now, it's about time and just quality time to do what you want to do.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with that. And what sort of one inadequacy that you believe that you have that you can start working on as of tomorrow?
Maybe getting up a bit earlier. Because all you hear is all these guys, yeah, I'll get up at 7 o'clock in the morning and do my workout, check my emails and then do this and do that. Me, even now, the little one's starting to wake up late. Like today we got up at like 9:30. Yeah, so I'm thinking, oh, this is good. She's sleeping later. Rather than wake up at like 7, 8 in the morning. So I was like, oh, you got the daddy gene. So, but yeah, no, that's probably the only thing really.
You get the wife on, see what she says.
Exactly.
And then my last question, I always wrap the show up with this, is Jason, how are you doing?
I'm good. Apart from this cold that I had last week or week before that, 39 degrees fever. Internally, I'm all right. A bit weak, but not too bad. But apart from that, I'm fine. Looking forward to Christmas. Just chilling, relaxing. Last Christmas, I had COVID. So I binged Dynasty. I said it, Dynasty. And then this Christmas, it's just going to chill now. Just going to chill and relax. But I'm fine overall. I'm good. Wicked. Apart from my health.
Appreciate it, mate. Thank you very much for coming on the show.